Before we get in the program, it's time for this week's joke of the week. My neighbor takes a really long time to cut his grass. It's like he's in slow-mo.
Hardy har har. So this week's garden joke is brought to you by Rescue.com. American-made rescue use products to keep your family, home, and garden protected from pests, insects like wasps, hornets, yellow jackets, fire ants, and more. Learn more at Rescue.com. That's RescuE.com.
You not find it funny? Slow-mo.
No.
No?
I was not. It was a
swing and a miss?
Mediocre joke at best.
Swing and a miss?
Swing and a miss.
All right. Well, and it's this time of year where some are in the garden. Many are still anticipating the time to get in the garden. So we're going to go over in segment one and segment two here, first half of the show, 10 suggestions that we would make to you in order to get your garden to grow better than it's ever grown before. Because we all can learn things from each other. We're not just sitting up here on some high throne going, we're the Garden Talk radio host and we know everything. We don't. We don't know everything, and you teach us as well as we teach you. So we're going to go over these. One is covering your carrots at the time of planting.
I was just going to say this is your little favorite tip.
Well, so. It's very successful. By covering, carrot seeds are extremely tiny. They need a very light dusting of soil on top of them in order to germinate. The problem being that soil dries out very rapidly and the soil seed contact is diminished because there's no moisture there for the seed to germinate with. So plant your seeds in a row or broadcast them in a little area, two or three square feet. Take cardboard and cover them and secure that cardboard down. Okay, let's back up a minute. If you're doing it in rows, you can use 2x4, 2x8, something solid to cover the row. You're going to plant your seed. You're going to dust it with soil. You're going to water it and then cover it. Covering that with that cardboard or the 2x8 or whatever you have and securing it down so it doesn't become a projectile in a strong wind and take the neighbor's window out, it is holding the moisture in the soil, which is holding moisture next to the seed, which allows the seed to germinate. By doing this, you're going to increase your germination rate by about 80%. And then you can go in and thin out, if necessary, those seeds that have kind of all kind of grew together. But this works very, very well in the seed. And this works well for carrots, parsnips, also works well for that to hold that moisture in the very small seeds. Now, I wouldn't do this with radishes or anything like that, spinach or lettuce, because those are very, very quick-growing germinational seeds. Carrots can take somewhere up to 14, 21 days in non-peak conditions.
Right. So the next one we have is top your Brussels sprouts. You might think, what on earth does that mean? It basically means once your Brussels sprouts start to form the little heads, you can first see them start to form. Then what you're going to do is you're going to cut the top of the plant off, the plant that is flowering.
Top six inches. Growth tip. That's what's going to essentially stress the plant out and stop vertical growth and focus energy on the development of the sprouts. And again, you've said this, Holly, before. If you've never had homegrown Brussels sprouts, that's why you hate Brussels sprouts.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think that a lot of people were forced to eat Brussels sprouts at some point in their life by either a well-meaning parent and or grandparent or who knows. And if you've never had homegrown ones that have been cooked properly, prepared properly, then you are missing out.
Grow cilantro indoors, Holly.
Yeah, you can grow it indoors.
We've tried to grow it. Many people have tried to grow it outside, but it bolts very quickly or goes to seed very quickly.
I
was trying to set you up there, but I'll take the walk-off home run there. So what we have done is we take party cups, or you can do this in little planter cups or planter terracotta pots, and start them in succession. You'll start one pot cilantro this week, wait a week and a half, start another pot. What is going to do, and you put it on your windowsill, this allows the plant to germinate and grow 4, 5, 6 inches tall. You're going to cut it back and use it for whatever you need it for. and then you'll probably get about another cutting off of that, and then that pot is done. That's why you have another one started a week and a half later and another one started a week and a half after that. So you always have a succession of cilantro, and you can grow it year-round no matter where you live in the world. You don't have to worry about it going to seed or bolting.
Right. That's exactly what you want to do. So then cornmeal for early blight.
This is tomatoes.
And what you do is at the time of planting, after you have the tomato planted, but before you mulch, you take a handful of whole grain.
I saw a post on one of our social media platforms today, and it was like Gardeners Are Us, whatever, and it said, you got to listen to Kramer. It's a little picture of him saying, you got to mulch.
So before you mulch, let me get through this. Don't confuse our people. Before you mulch, what you do, and once you have the tomato planted, you take a handful of whole grain cornmeal. So you want to make sure it's not the processed stuff, but it's the whole grain.
Yellow whole grain
cornmeal, and you put it around the base of each plant. And then you do this about mid-season again as well. Like you kind of scrape the mulch back, put the cornmeal, put the mulch back. So you do this before you mulch, and this is going to, it has a beneficial fungi in it called Trichoderma, and this will help combat that early blight, and it makes a huge difference.
Early blight's in everybody's soil. It doesn't matter what you do. Unless you're growing in a soilless mix, you're going to have early blight in the soil. And this makes a tremendous difference. Like I said, we learned this from a master gardener, Garden Talk host out of the Texas area, Bob Webster, about going on 10 years now. And since we've done that, we've had bright green, luscious tomatoes all the way up to the time of frost. Prior to that, like many of you, we would have the tomatoes grow, and it's great. They look good, and progressively through the season, they start dying off, and by the end of the season, you have a skeleton of a plant with some fruit hanging off of it. And the next one is grow what you can vertically, your beans, your cucumbers, your small squashes. Grow them vertically.
So this is something that Joey had to kind of learn once we started doing more urban gardening, because he grew up on a farm.
And the only thing we trellised was peas.
Yeah. You guys didn't cage tomatoes?
We caged tomatoes, but wasn't really considered a trellis.
Yeah, that's true.
And we did some pole beans, but the, you know, cucumbers sprawled, watermelons sprawled. It just, we had the space.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, this is something that Joey had learned, is that you have to trellis stuff if you don't, that you have a lot of space for things that vine when you grow up versus out, especially if you are tight on space, whether it be in an urban garden, wherever you are, maybe it's just even like a porch, patio, or deck, you have this ability to trellis, and that's going to, A, save you room, but B, you're also going to be able to see the vegetables easier, and then also, a lot of times, it keeps them from disease and pests and problems.
Well, and you can physically see up underneath, you know, if you've got let's say a bean rust problem or an infestation of something under the leaves, and they're not on the ground. Like you said, you can physically, oh, look, we got a problem. We got to address this in whatever safe means you feel necessary in order to eradicate or alter that situation.
And for things like cucumbers, it's kind of amazing to me about how easy it is to see the cucumbers when you're picking them, when they're right in front of your face versus if they're on the ground just kind of floating around.
Because many of us have experienced that sprawling of the cucumbers on the ground, and we pick them and we think we got everything, and then we come out next week and there's a cucumber the size of, you know, a 40-pound bag of feed, or, you know, 10 football. They're a humongous cucumber that is nowhere close to being consumptionable. And it's become so bitter that it's actually gone to seed. And anytime a vegetable begins to go to seed, like a cucumber or a zucchini, it begins to shut the plant down. Or green beans, if left on the plant long enough, they decrease, the plant begins to shut down because it's in the reproductive state, not the put fruit on state.
That's the scientific term. Put fruit on state.
Put on fruit on state, yeah. Something like, yeah.
All right, so speaking of, you know, knowing where your food comes from, Walton's has everything you need for all things but the meat. So they have the equipment, seasoning, supplies to make sausage, turkey, and any other meat product your way to your high standards. MeatGistics.com is there to help educate the people on the hows and whys of the meat processing, as well as a community of almost 15,000 users who help give their opinion and guidance on meat processing issues. At Waltons.com, you can get anything to help with the meats. They have meat grinders, sausage stuffers, mixers, and more.
Seasonings if you're not, not into the butchering aspect.
To help you go from animal to edible, Walton's everything but the meat. If you use code GROW50, that's GROW50, you can save 10% off of your order of $50 or more. And that's at waltonsinc.com.
Welcome back to the Garden with Joy and Holly radio show. Thank you for allowing us to be part of your day and you being part of ours. We're going to continue the conversation about 10 things that we suggest to help your garden grow better this year. But first, a word from Honey Bee Healthy.
Since 2000, Honey Bee Healthy Inc. has helped beekeepers maintain healthy and thriving hives. Attracting pollinators to your garden this year is as simple as hanging a hummingbird feeder with a mixture of sugar water and Honey Bee Healthy Original. Don't be alarmed to see birds, bees, and butterflies doing this together at the feeder. Pollinators coexist peacefully. Honey Bee Healthy is offering a 10% discount on an 8-ounce bottle of Honey Bee Healthy Original to the show's listeners. Enter code BEEGARDEN at checkout. That's B-E-E Garden at checkout. For more information, mixing instructions, and to purchase products, visit honeybeehealthy.com. That's honey, the letter B, healthy.com. That music, that intro music was really punchy.
If you are not able to capture those locations and those coupon codes that are provided throughout the program, you can go to our parent website, thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com, and click on the money tab at the top of the page, and they're all listed for you. And you just remember them as you go to their checkout. You just click on the image, and it'll take you to their website, and you can save on what they're offering.
I'm feeling punchy, and I was going to say they should just listen more carefully.
Well, some people are driving. Some people are driving.
I'm just kidding.
Keep your hands on the wheel.
Please keep your hands on the wheel.
Don't drive fast and take chances.
Yes. Stay in your own lane.
In a lot of things. All right. We'll continue here. Watch for the squash vine borer. Many people have difficulty not being able to grow zucchini.
Why don't you talk about the squash vine borer? Well, I can explain what it is.
Yeah.
So squash vine borer is a little insect. I don't even know how big it is, but that's...
It's a moth.
It is a moth. So what happens is that it likes to insert its eggs into the base of squash plants. So the base stems of squash plants, everything but the butternut?
Yes.
No, yes. Butternut squash. So it can be zucchini, acorn.
Pumpkin.
Pumpkin, buttercup, all of those squashes, just not the butternut squash, even like the pink banana squash or whatever it's called. So what it does is it puts those eggs into the base of the plant. Then you go out to look at your plant and you're like, oh, it looks like it needs to be watered. But I'm pretty sure it was watered yesterday, so you water it because the plant will look all wilty and bleh. So if you see that, especially like, I don't know, like what, July maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah. Typically like we're in zone
six.
I wanted to say five.
We were.
And you're like, my plant looks sad and I'm going to water it. Check the base of the stem. Now, what happens is once those eggs obviously hatch, the larva starts to eat the inside of the stem. And if you've never grown squash, the stem of squashes are typically like pencil thick or thicker. They become thicker, but in the beginning, they're about pencil thick. So there's plenty of room for those larvae to kind of eat and move around. So then you'll see the larva, and what you can do is you can then take a little, I don't know, box cutter knife, pull the larva out. They do crawl up to taller parts of the stem, so make sure you look for them everywhere, and then you can just like toss some dirt on it. It'll scab over, but you're going to save yourself a lot of time.
Yeah, you want to vertically cut an insert and then open it up a little bit. You don't want to detach it from the root system to the stalk.
Then
it's dead. But as you do that, you're going to basically cut a small chunk out of that stalk or that stem, and you're going to see that those white larvae. And that's what you're going to remove.
Larvae.
If you want a more visual representation of that, you can go to thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com and in the search bar put squash vine borer. And we've got a handful of videos showing how to do such that. Next one is squash undercover. Now, we all want to get a jump start on a lot of things in the garden. And oftentimes, We may try and fail because the temperatures do not cooperate with us. What we have found to work successful in planting zucchini, we talked about squash vine borer. That's later on in its life. This is right at the time of planting. Typically, where we're at, we will plant summer squash, zucchini, crookneck, Memorial Day weekend. Now, what we have found is if we can plant it May 1st, we plant it as normal in the soil, and we take a metal or now they are like cardboard, aluminum-covered coffee cans, the big ones, the five-pound ones, cut the bottom out of it, and then leave the opaque lid on and over and cover it over the planting of the squash, like a greenhouse. The squash is going to take a good 1 week to germinate, and then you can watch that, and if it gets too large inside of it, you can crack the lid slightly. And then over the course of second week in May, third week in May, Memorial Day's here, you can vent that coffee can and it will begin to harden off, and you are basically got a 30-day head start on your squash. Bonus, in some instances, not 100%, but it doesn't hurt, that coffee can around the base can also deter that squash vine borer from getting down into and inserting the larvae into the stalk itself. We've seen that both ways, but it doesn't hurt to have a little more barrier around it. Not everybody wants to do that, but it does work. We are able to get a little more squash started earlier. Irrigation, Holly, is the key here to success.
So I didn't realize when we first started using irrigation what it was exactly, because when I was growing up, we would drive past farms and we would see these big metal, metal.
Oh, the big, basically radio antennas, towers, horizontal, spraying water.
Yeah.
With big wheels, and it would progressively.
And I would say, what is that? And my parents would say, that's irrigation.
Uh-huh. So we had a neighbor back on the farm when he was alive. He had a pond, and the tractor would run all night, and it would work its way across the field. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hundreds and hundreds of gallons of water.
Right. So anyway, so when you were like, we're going to do irrigation, I was like, we're going to put these huge,
giant irrigation.
Well, I mean, obviously I knew it wasn't going to be like that huge, but like, I didn't realize
you didn't understand drip or soaker hose type of irrigation.
Right.
Or, yeah.
So if you're like me and you're like, that seems like a lot, it's not. You do have to soaker hose or drip irrigation. You do have to be kind of strategic about how you're going to place it around your garden.
Dripworks.com or EatonBrothers.com for your irrigation.
Yeah. So you have options, and it's an investment. I will say that it's not exactly like cheap up front, but it's worth it because you have your consistent watering.
$80 to $150 on an average. You can do most gardens. And it's incredible how well the plant grows when it's getting proper hydration on a daily basis and not getting watered whenever it rains.
Right, exactly. So you do have a lot of control there. And that's the important part is, like, we've learned over these years that a lot of times when people have problems with their plants, vegetables, etc., it's because of a lack of consistent watering. And I hate to say it, but, a lot of us are in a drought. And at this point, it's not going to get any better.
So, yeah, and they have timers where we run it at 8, noon, and 5 for 20 minutes a day, for 20-minute increments. So it's 1 hour a day, and it works very well to keep the plants hydrated. Another way, in addition to the irrigation, is mulching. There's many different types of natural mulches in which you can apply on top of your soil. Mulches do multiple tasks. One, holds the moisture in. Two, cools the soil. Three, suppresses some, not all, of the weeds. So by doing that and keeps the soil healthier, allows more good insects to be active closer to the top of the soil. And we learned last week it's a horizon is the scientific term, not topsoil. It does all these things. And what can you use as mulch? You can use chemical-free, seed-free grass clippings. You can use leaves. You can use chemical-free straw. You can use shredded paper. You can use sometimes landscape fabric. Many different mulches you can use. You can buy mulch, or you can manufacture it on your property naturally if you're not applying chemicals on your lawn in order to do other things like weed and feed.
Right, right.
But if you're not mulching, you're missing out. If you're not wanting to irrigate, you need to mulch. If you're irrigating, also mulch.
Right, absolutely. So then let's talk about some root crops here.
Yep.
And so what happens with these root crops specifically is that either the seeds are super, super, super tiny or they're cluster seeds. And so with these
What is a cluster seed?
I'll explain in a second.
Okay, all right.
With these three plants, root crops, you want to thin them out. So once you plant them, you might see a lot of sprouts coming up, and then you want to thin them, which means you just basically either pull out or cut the sprouts so that there's proper spacing of the plants. And this includes carrots and parsnips, even radishes, and I think even turnips have really small seeds.
Turnips, rutabagas, yeah.
So anything like kind of in that realm. You want to thin those out once you plant them because you might plant more than one per like little spot and it just happens.
And if you don't thin them out, you're going to get top, but you're not going to get the bulb.
Yeah.
This doesn't apply to like leaf lettuce or spinach.
No, this is for the
roots. Or Swiss chard. Yeah. Right. Yeah. These are the root crops. Yes.
Right. And then for beets come in a cluster seed. Basically, it's just the seed is just many seeds, probably like what, three or four? I don't know. In the seed, what looks like one seed. So that's why you want to thin those out, because it's a cluster of seeds, and then once it starts to sprout, you'll see many sprouts, and then you just want to go ahead and thin out. You just want to pick the best looking one.
Now, it's nothing you can do in order to fix that. That's the way the plant naturally reproduces seeds in that cluster seed. You're not going to break them apart and get one seed, break all the, it's not going to happen that way. Work on, and we're going to bonus one here, work on planting more perennial plants, such as berries, Jerusalem artichokes, asparagus, strawberries, etc., fruit trees, in addition to that.
Yeah, so you just want to make sure that if you live in a place or you're growing in a place that you can, that you would have a likeliness of being able to appreciate the perennial plants, you want to plant them. Maybe if you are living somewhere you don't know if you can appreciate the perennial plants, you can still plant them. But yeah, you want to do that. That way you have, it's kind of a more permaculture ideal where
less work.
Yeah, you're less work. You are kind of lazy gardening in a way, and you have those plants that keep coming back.
Right, and less work, and they do the work for you. Well, soon it'll be warming up, Holly, and you will want to protect your yard from those beetles, grubs, those Japanese beetles, and those grubs.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, spring is here, and spring has sprung, and those Japanese beetles
are
just probably lurking around waiting, and the Grubagon can help with that.
Grubagon can be applied directly to the turf or around ornamentals to control grubs and lessen the impact the beetles have on your yard this summer. Easy to apply with any commercial spreader or irrigate it right in the soil. Created specifically to target the grubs and beetle invaders without harming those beneficial insects such as bees, butterflies, and ladybugs.
Yeah, so it's the only BT that works, the non-chemical BT that works. You can find out more at phylumbioproducts.com. That's phylumbioproducts.com, phylumbioproducts.com.